Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So, give us some more examples of great Catholic scenes.
Whew. Okay. So, I can tell you ones that I've done, my favorite ones.
Yes,
the
please.
The first, like, big Catholic scene that I did was at another party, and I actually purchased, like, a full-on habit.
Great.
So, I have that in my closet.
You got it from, like, the nun catalog.
So, unfortunately, there isn't really a nun catalog.
Okay.
They exist for priests.
Huh.
Like, you can order priest garb from catalogs and the internet. But at least when I bought this, I could not find one for nuns.
Nuns who are listening to this.
Yeah.
Get at us.
Let's go. Where do you buy this stuff? And even when I just went to Rome this past year, and there are so many stores that sell priest vestments, none for the nuns. But I think they just make their own stuff.
Right.
But I found a shop on Etsy that sells pretty close. I don't know if they're replicas or if I don't know who's making these things, but they're like pretty legit. So I bought one, and my partner was the schoolgirl, and I caught her passing a note in class, or someone caught her passing a note in class, and she had to come to, like, the head nun's office.
Sure.
To get in trouble. And so, and this is part of why Catholicism is, like, a never-ending resource for honestly everything dirty, but the punishment and the person in charge corrupting and taking advantage of.
Ah, yes.
Yes, the younger or person less experienced, which could be like the head nun and the lesser nun, the priest and the schoolboy, you know,
yeah,
et cetera. So we were
a priest and a nun.
Yes, priest
and
nun.
There's lots of hierarchies.
Yeah, pope and.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, because there's like
anyone.
A whole there's like a
pope and bishop.
Right.
Yeah, she came to my office. Let me see if I remember what I did. I made her recite the sinner's prayer.
Okay.
And then
that sounds right.
I have a celice, which is something that Catholics who are really serious about self-punishment.
Mm.
Self-flagellation is
When you flog yourself.
Yeah, when you flog yourself, but the overall category of harming yourself or restricting something for, you know, to be more spiritual or holy is called mortification of the flesh.
Right. I've heard of mortification of the flesh.
Yeah. So,
this is why this topic appealed to me, because, you know, there's certainly melodrama.
Oh, yeah.
It's very campy. There's a lot of camp potential.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So
a lot of theater.
I had a celice, which is like a spiky garter.
Whoa.
Yeah. So you hit it, and it is, you know, the Opus Dei priests will wear them. It's for self-punishment. So I have two of those now, but one of them I actually ordered from, like, the Italian nuns.
Great.
So it's, like, authentic. And I think she was wearing that, and I was, like, beating it and making her bleed and beating her with the Bible. And then she had to, I essentially, like, choked her with grape juice, which was supposed to be blood.
Sure.
So I, like, poured it down my, like, and in Dusk Till Dawn when Selma Hayek pours the drink down her foot.
Uh-huh.
I like did that with the wine.
Great.
And she was like choking on it. And then because she was bleeding from being beaten, the Bible was getting blood all over it.
Great.
So I like ripped out the bloody pages and stuffed them in her mouth.
Great.
Oh my God, it was great. There may have been more, but I don't remember.
That you've got my attention.
Yes. So I made her repent for her sins.
Sure.
As one does. And then another really fun scene I can remember is me and two other women went to a Catholic mass in Latin.
Whoa.
At the Church of the Holy Innocents. Two of us were like church ladies, and we were actually all dressed like church ladies. We got the third person who her husband, you know, just travels all the time. So she's all alone. So we brought her home with us to show her how to really pray.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what, we were being very charitable. We went to mass and like got communion, which had been the first time I've done that in so long, and then went home to pray, and we taught her how to pray.
Do you have any tips you'd like to share with us?
So that can involve lots of things. Orgasms, great way to pray.
Yeah, closer to God.
Definitely brings you closer to God. And it's funny because when people have learned their whole life how to pray, like you get on your knees and you say the Our Father, the Hail Mary, they don't know they've been doing it wrong the entire time.
God, you're cracking me up.
So, but the most fun part of that night was we got home and me and my friend who were like the tops in the situation, like the teaching the other person how to pray, we like took her clothes off and found that she had stuffed a rosary in her pussy.
Amazing.
She was wearing it all night.
Amazing.
Yes. Oh, so good.
Let's talk about nuns.
Yes.
So I don't think you need to be a rocket scientist to understand the idea that, like, if you have a group of women who take a vow of celibacy and live together and wear outfits that hide basically everything about their bodies.
Right.
That the curiosity about what that experience of, what is the word? Aestheticism? Self-denial and self-control, or like devotion or whatever, like what that experience is like, but also the desire to corrupt someone who has like devoted themselves to innocence or purity or whatever. Like, I mean, I can understand the appeal of corruption.
Oh yes.
Can you speak to that?
Yeah. That in and of itself, and that lends itself to like other scenes that I've done that aren't Catholic, the idea of corruption,
yeah,
like age play,
sure,
that type of stuff is really interesting. But it is always present in Catholicism. Nuns specifically is even more fun because it's true. Like, they're all lesbians. This is documented and true.
Tell me more. Tell me more.
I recently read a book called Lesbian Nuns Breaking Silence.
Okay. Okay.
And I learned that they actually, if you live in a convent, they have a term for this. And so say you're a young 19-year-old and you graduated high school and you're like, yes, this is my calling in life. I'm going to become a nun. And you get make it to the convent and you suddenly have a best friend and you're inseparable.
A best friend. And it's not Jesus.
No.
It's a fellow nun.
It's a fellow nun. And even if this relationship is completely innocent, the older nuns will tell you, we advise against particular friends. So the term particular friends is code for lesbians.
Oh my God.
Inside of, I don't know if it's like all of the clergy or like just the nuns I mean, I'm sure they know about it. But so a lot of the stories, and these were all like true stories from a lot of different ex-nuns who are now lesbians. And they all, it, literally almost every story is exactly the same. And when they're young, because they never knew about, like, being gay is not an option.
Sure.
So you go to the convent, and you're probably there because you're gay and you just don't know it yet.
Right.
You know, I had no interest in boys ever. So I
might as well be married to Jesus.
Right. God must be calling me to be a nun. So they get there and they make a best friend. And the older nuns are like, no, no, no. You have to devote all your time to Jesus. No, no particular friendships. And then, you know, years pass and they end up fucking their nun best friends. And then they're like, oh, that's what particular friendships mean. That's definitely a thing.
None desire. Because then you're like corrupting each other, or one of you is seducing and the other is succumbing.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. But the idea of like the taboo of we're not supposed to do this and literally we will burn in hell if we do this.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it more stark when you're, like, extra super devoted to that idea.
Right. Yeah. Like, the oppression of it all. Like, you know, you're supposed to be celibate and you're literally married to Jesus, but you don't have sex with him and you don't have sex with yourself. One of the nuns in the book actually ended up staying a nun, but somehow living with her, like, life partner.
Yeah.
And she rationalized it by creating her own definition of celibacy. Yeah, which is, like, celibacy of my spiritual self. So, like, she fucks, but convenient. Yeah, she keeps her soul pure or whatever.
I mean, I'm keeping my soul pure, too. I mean, I wonder if it's also that thing where people are like, oh, you can, like, you're not losing your virginity if you do it in the butt.
Oh, yeah.
Or you're not losing your virginity if it's with a girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably like that.
Yeah. Which sucks, because then it's like, it's not as legit of sex, but then it's also kind of like using the Catholic heteronormativity against it and being like, yeah, I can totally be a nun. I'm not having the kind of sex that you say that I'm not supposed to have specifically.
Right.
I guess they probably say that you're specifically not supposed to have lesbian sex either.
There's only like one mention of lesbianism in the Bible. So
what does it say?
I think it just briefly, and it's in the Old Testament.
Okay.
In the Song of Solomon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it...
Otherwise, a very sexy text.
I think, if I'm remembering this correctly, and it says, like, you just, like, can't lay with women like you would lay with a man.
All right. Well.
Something... It actually might even be more vague than that.
Probably is.
Yeah, but it's definitely, like, the man on man is maybe a level, you get sent a level deeper into hell.
Great.
Than you do if you just...
Well, so speaking of hell, what do you think about, are you into like eroticizing the devil?
So I do sometimes do scenes like that as well. And like, shout out to Bad Dragon. I have a demon dick.
Great.
And it is my favorite dildo ever.
What do you love about it?
It's just like a casual, everyday dildo.
What do you love about it? What do you love about this demon dick?
No, the shape of it is actually, like, incredible. Oh. Yeah.
Like, not just visually, but, like, feeling-wise.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
It's unreal. So I have that, and then I also have, like, a crucifix dildo.
Yeah.
So, like... I've done, you know, like, if you've been a bad girl this week, you get the crucifix dildo. If you've been a good girl, you get the demon dick because you're getting corrupted.
Good is bad and bad is good.
Yeah.
There's
an end to every situation that involves, like, you know, one or the other.
Cool. That's fun.
Yeah.
Are you into, like, possession and exorcism and...
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see it in your face.
Yes, I've done... exorcist scenes, those are really fun too, especially when you like, I mean, the person who performs the exorcism is the priest.
Sure.
Yeah. So those can get really fun.
I would think it would be really fun to, like, be the possessed person.
Yeah. When I bottomed a long time ago, one of the first, like, pretty intense scenes I did was an exorcism scene. And I was like, oh, shit. That was actually before the church. That was even before the church party. That was maybe that was the beginning of it all.
When you were first possessed.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah.
And the possession lends itself to, like, you know, you were doing all of these horrible things and, like, you have to be exorcised, which could involve a million different things.
Yeah. Any number of fucked up things.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also, you're not then responsible for your actions. Right? Because it's the demon that is saying your mother sucks cocks in hell and...
Right.
Like, crab walking up and down the stairs, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
Yeah, fucking yourself with a crucifix.
Yes.
Yeah. So what about corporal punishment?
Oh, yes.
I told you that Catholicism leaves me cold, but I, you know, some related things are interesting to me.
Yeah. So bringing it back to mortification of the flesh.
Yes.
Thinking about suffering as, like, a spiritual experience.
Tell me more.
Yeah. And I mean, I know a lot of masochists who feel this way. I can't quite relate, but I can relate on the other side. So can I read you a little Bible verse here?
That would be a first. It will be a first for why are people into that. But please go ahead. Okay.
For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the misdeeds of the body, you will live. So that's Romans 8:13. And
are you a fan of that one?
Yeah. So there's a lot of talk about the flesh and the body and what is to be done and what shouldn't be done and how to save your soul by beating yourself if you have an impure thought.
Yeah.
Which is great, but it is even more fun if someone else does it to you, you know?
Fun and probably also effective.
Yes. Totally. So the corporal punishment, like, what is the movie about Jesus?
That The Last Temptation of Christ?
No, the one that came out.
Life of Brian.
No. Jim Caviezel is like.
Oh, The Passion of
the
Christ?
The Passion of the Christ. Okay. So if you've seen that scene in The Passion of the Christ where Christ is getting, like, whipped with, like, that spiky flog or whatever that thing is,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
That is so hot.
Mm.
And I wish that I could do that, but I think that the punishment aspect of it is one of the most fun things.
Punishment, I mean, it makes me think about also the idea of, like, masochism as a spiritual experience. It makes me think of, like, by being beaten, you can show devotion to either, like, the priest or to God, or you're also, like cleansing yourself. So it's sort of like, it's like a spiritual detox.
Yes.
Being absolved. You're, like, seeking absolution from the authority figure who can give it to you, or you're being coerced or forced to be beaten. Maybe you're not pursuing that, like, feeling of being cleansed. Like, maybe you're a schoolgirl or a Catholic schoolgirl or Catholic schoolboy, and you, like, need to be taught. You need to have the sin beaten out of you, or you need to have, or you've misbehaved, or you've had an impure thought, or you were, like, masturbating, or you were, like, fucking a girl, or you were sucking dick, or whatever, and you need to, like, be beaten as, like, negative reinforcement, like, like, punishment in the truest, or discipline in the truest sense of the word.
Yeah.
Which is obviously something that we associate with nuns and other authority figures in the church. And that also has, like, a sense of, like, humiliation.
Yes.
Probably also, like, the intimacy of, like, probably a lot of very, like, sexually frustrated people who have taken vows of celibacy are, like, taking out their, like, sexual aggression by, like, punishing people.
Yeah. And that is, so it starts I guess, like, biblically, it was you would punish yourself.
Right.
And a lot of super, super religious sects still do that, like the Opus Dei. So you can buy these special floggers that, like, you whip yourself with on the back, and the ceviche that goes around your thigh, and there's these spiky belts and hair shirts.
Oh, yeah, hair shirts.
Yeah, which is, like, I would like to try one on, because I feel like that wouldn't really be, maybe it's, like, a slow torture.
Yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, sleeping on a stone bench or on the floor when you could be in your nice bed, because it's like, oh, I have to,
'cause you're so
bad. I have to cleanse myself.
Right. Or I feel so guilty about being such a bad person.
Right. And yeah, and then, like, the discipline in the church is like, you know, I heard stories of my dad in Catholic school getting hit by the nuns and being, like, pretty severely beaten. And then that corporal punishment is, I think, always shameful.
Yeah.
If it's not, you know, consensual in a kinky way negotiated, which then could also be shameful. Maybe that's the point.
It's a different configuration of shame. Yeah.
So all of that can be used and eroticized, but the discipline and the humiliation are also really great things. Like, if you are into being, you know, told what a dirty slut you are, that's a great way to incorporate humiliation and corporal punishment. You have to be beaten or whipped for being such a slut in school.
You were talking about ritual.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that there's something simple and relaxing about the idea that, like, Catholics definitely think that being slutty is bad.
Yes.
So you don't, there's not this vague, like, well, I've been socialized in this horophobic society. It's like, no, there's this, like, ancient belief that these acts are bad. And, like, you know, and then there's also this sort of, like, fucked up element of, like, the patriarchy interpreting that it's, like, actually maybe not bad at all. It's just powerful people exploiting their power over you, which I suppose then brings us to the elephant in the room of eroticizing Catholicism, which is the very real issue of Catholic leaders sexually exploiting people that they have power over.
Right.
Which is fucked up.
Yes.
And also, things that are fucked up are hot.
That is very true.
Do you have any thoughts on sexual exploitation?
Yeah.
By powerful people in the church.
It's terrible. And I think more people are talking about it now, but everyone knows that it's been going on forever.
What's the deal with that, man?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure what the... maybe... I mean, I have theories that no one talked to each other about anything besides the weather before, like, 10 years ago.
Right.
So maybe it's that. A change in generations. People now realize, like, oh, like, this isn't okay and I need to talk about this.
Yeah.
Like you said, that fucked up things are hot.
Yeah. I guess, like, going back to corporal punishment, there is, like, also the idea of, like, tests of endurance or, like, wanting to be, like, the most holy or the most pure and, like, demonstratively the most holy. So, like, oh, I can, like, lash myself more than anybody else, therefore I am, like, the closest to God.
Or, yeah,
like, I am the winner of the spiritual...
Right.
Race.
Yes.
Whatever that is.
Yeah. That might be totally a thing. The more time you spend in your hair shirt...
Right.
The, you know... higher your chances are of getting into heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This November, the Pleasure Chest is holding their sexiest sale of the year. If you've been a longtime Wired People Into That listener, you know that holiday shopping drives me bananas, and I do everything I can to avoid it. But I'm really happy to be sponsored by the Pleasure Chest because I truly think if there's one thing to get you through the stress of this season, it's saving money on the things that bring you real joy, like vibrators. Starting Wednesday, November 27th and running through Monday, December 2nd, you can get 20% off anything on pleasurechest.com. That's dildos, butt plugs, books, DVDs, lube, kink gear, and so much more of the best pleasure products out there. Plus, all Fun Factory toys will be 25% off during that stretch. And you get free shipping if you place your order on Cyber Monday. Remember, that's Monday, December 2nd. And don't forget, as always, the Pleasure Chest's weekly Pleasure Ed workshops are free and open to adults 18 and older of all genders, sexual orientations, and relationship statuses. Follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram and Twitter for up-to-the-minute info on their free weekly workshops in New York City, Los Angeles, and Chicago. There's workshops on hand sex, double penetration, threesomes, and so much more. Fall in lust this autumn with the Pleasure Chest. And now, on with the show.
There's a show on Netflix called The Keepers.
Oh, I don't know about it.
So it's a terrible story about priest, or a ring more like, in Baltimore, in the Archdiocese in Baltimore. And this nun finds out what they're doing and she ends up getting killed. And it's like, and it's all true. So it's like, it was a nun school and they were pretty young. And the priest was the therapist.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. Trigger warning. He was molesting certain kids that he knew were vulnerable because he was the therapist.
Yeah, that's what predators do.
Right. So he would say things like, have them, you know, come to his office and be like, tell me about what's going on at home. And then be like, okay, well, you know, for your penance this week for talking back to your mom, you have to suck my dick.
God, I have no trouble like repeating over and over and over again that like there is a difference between like the exploitation of power, which is not okay, and eroticizing and reclaiming and reusing, reducing,
recycling,
and closing the fucking loop, man. That has the potential for healing,
yeah.
Actually, and yeah, reclaiming mm-hmm. that power. And it's just like other kinds of age play and consensual non-consent that we've talked about. It makes sense that we would eroticize religious authorities in this way, because the whole point of religious authority is that they're like, not only am I in charge, but I get my power from the highest power.
Right. They're emboldened by literally God. I watched The Keepers, and several people have been like, the show's really fucked up, Christine, but it made me feel things, so it might make you feel things. And I watched it, and I was like, this is so awful.
Yeah.
But I am so turned on.
Yeah.
And also, I've done many of these things. You just have to
like
watch
in
it.
Scenes, you
lot.
Mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
A lot of the stuff that happened to these people who are telling their stories in real life, I was like, I haven't ever seen this, but like I already did that in like this, you know, negotiated power exchange.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
I was the priest and somebody else was the schoolgirl.
I guess there's also like a fun queering element
oh, yeah.
of like the fact that women aren't allowed, right?
Yeah.
Women aren't allowed to be priests.
Being a priest is fucking hot. It's so hot.
What's hot about it?
I don't really fuck with gender a lot. I think that actually is maybe the only time that I've ever done that. But I mean, I guess being a daddy is fucking with gender.
Totally.
But I don't see myself...
Oh, yes, you identify as a femme daddy.
Yeah, yeah, I identify as a daddy. And, like, when I'm daddy, I guess I feel, like, less woman and more something else.
Interesting.
And so priest is, like, priest is daddy. Priest is holy daddy. So,
great.
Yeah, and especially if you're, like, dressing the part, like, I would not wear something like that. So it's very different. And being like in a role, if you're role playing the part of a man feels very different. Like a priest feels very different than a nun.
Totally.
Yeah. In the aesthetics, everything is gold and
oh yes,
everything is embellished and beautiful. And like, you know, the Catholic Church has billions and probably maybe trillions of dollars. So everything's beautiful. Unless you're like the lowliest of priests and you don't have any gold. But
it's also a very clear, like, again, demonstration of power. Like the shinier your outfit, the more powerful you are. And again, you get that power from God.
Right.
So that means that you're closer to God.
Yeah.
God has like granted you good fortune or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. Just Catholic God do that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, supposed to not be classist or anything like that.
Right, right.
But
because you're pure.
Totally.
Yeah.
The aesthetics of Catholicism, it's very, like, pageantry.
Sure.
And camp.
Yes.
I mean, that makes me think that it's just gay. Like the faggotry of Catholicism. Like you, if you imagine like most of these nuns are lesbians, you would have to think most of the priests are gay and they probably love these outfits.
They probably love the outfits. And going back to what we were saying about the lesbian nuns, repression is fucking bad.
Yeah.
It's bad news. It's
terrible.
So it makes sense that people who take a vow of celibacy that they think is a good idea actually just end up feeling fucking frustrated, to put right. it mildly.
Yeah.
And they either pour that into exploitative sadism, corporal punishment,
right.
or fancy gold leaf,
yes.
like caftans or whatever. That's fine. And then, you know, or worse, you know, or they like pour their repression into like something like much more exploitative and worse.
Yes. So another aspect of that is, this is a funny thing that I just learned also from this book called God's Beauty Parlor, which is literally a book about the Bible being gay. And it's by this gay theologian, Stephen D. Moore. There's like three parts of the book, but one of them talks about how, I'm going to bring this back to leather culture. So part of the book talks about how the images of Jesus, like pre-World War II, were really soft.
Huh.
Like Jesus was the boy and God was his daddy, right? So he's like playing with lambs in the field and like looking out onto the horizon, like very soft face and features. So at some point during around 1950, the Catholic Church decides, I'm sure with help or pressure from maybe the government, whatever, the Catholic Church decides, oh, Jesus is too soft.
Yeah.
We're going to commission some artists to make boy Jesus into daddy Jesus.
Oh my God.
So the images of Jesus start to change, and he's more like masculine, and his facial features are more like angular. And
yeah,
there's this one specific painting where there's a boy that's steering a boat, and Jesus is behind him, like looking super daddy, and he's like pointing out, like telling him which way to steer the boat. They did this because it's like wartime and they have
right.
the troops going overseas with little wallet size like pictures of Jesus. So imagine all of these soldiers like that have Daddy Jesus like postered, you know, on their barracks, and then leather culture.
Ah, yes. Okay.
I don't think that's a coincidence.
I see. Because a lot of the uniforms and rituals and protocol of leather culture comes from men coming home from World War II.
Yeah.
And, like, fucking getting it on in the seaport bars.
Yeah, so I just picture, like, the precursor to, like, Tom of Finland.
Sure.
Somewhere, Daddy Jesus. Yeah, somewhere in the world who's, like, jerking off in bed, looking up at the wall at a picture of Daddy Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you don't have any other pictures.
Right. Because you're not looking at your girlfriend that you left at home.
No. No. All you've got is Jesus.
Right.
Yeah, I also had this conversation recently about, like, why Catholicism is so eroticized in, I think it's safe to say, modern Western culture, to the point that it's almost like a joke or a cliche. Like, first of all, the Catholic schoolgirl.
Yeah.
Even the, like, the latex nun or the sexy nun.
Right.
Maybe to a certain degree, the, like, horny priest, although that one's probably become a bit more distasteful lately.
Yeah.
Even the idea of, like, self-flagellation or corporal punishment, I think, is, like, tacitly or almost, like, humorously accepted mm-hmm. as, like, oh, yeah, of course, like, people get off on this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not aware of as much of that with, like, eroticizing Hasidic or Orthodox Jewish rituals.
Right.
I know a lot of horny Hasidic Orthodox men. I don't see a lot of, like, eroticizing the wigs,
right.
You know, or anything like that. And I definitely don't know a lot about, like, eroticizing Islam or other religion, like, other global religions. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't. And so, I mean, my theory is that the reason that we eroticize Catholicism so much is because of how powerful the Catholic Church has been and how sadistic and mm-hmm. colonial and fucked up they've been.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I would have said the same thing. I mean, some of those other religions are pretty widespread, but the power of the Catholic Church throughout the world and the role that it's played in colonialism and
like the fucking Spanish Inquisition.
Right. All of these terrible things, like how many people have died for specifically the God that Catholics worship.
Yeah.
Millions.
Yeah.
And I think that makes it a lot easier to eroticize it because, I don't know.
Because of all that murder.
Yeah, all the bloodshed.
When you put it that way.
You know, you don't really eroticize stuff that isn't that intense.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Can you give us your brief take on blood and why are people into blood?
Yeah, that was my second choice, but I don't think I could have talked about blood for as long as I can talk about Catholicism.
Well, we have had an episode about blood, so.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, my friend Maxwell Lander.
I feel like I must have listened to that.
It's from pretty far, it's from a long time ago.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll send you the link.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he talks about, I mean, we talk about knife play and needle play and, like, lots of different stuff, but he also talks about his girlfriend putting her menstrual blood in, like, a bowl of vanilla ice cream.
Amazing. I love that.
That story, that sound you hear is the sound of, like, hundreds of people who, like, listen to lots of fucked up shit on this show and nevertheless are like, ugh, about, like, that one, which is why I love repeating it.
Yeah.
Because people who are into some sick shit are like, ah, menstrual ice cream, I can't handle it.
Come on.
See, this is why I wanted to repeat it to you.
Yeah, blood for me is, it kind of is adjacent to Catholicism and is definitely part of some of the stuff that I've done and played with within Catholicism, but it's the devotional aspect of it.
Mm.
So for me, a blood scene is always about power exchange.
Yeah.
You're taking someone's life force.
Yeah.
and doing, you know, whatever you want with it.
So vampiric.
Yeah. I wrote about my blood fetish in Fist 3, and actually all about vampirism.
Nice. So, I don't think I've read that one yet.
Yeah.
I gotta read it.
So I first was, I guess, interested in blood from being obsessed with vampires my whole life.
Same.
And, you know, the romanticism of that. I need this to sustain myself, and I'm literally feeding off of you. And especially in, like, in True Blood, let's say, where there's, like,
oh, yeah,
the fang bangers. And oh, they're yeah, like, you're, yeah, like, I give my life.
Well, so it's like, it's a, can... it's like the best drug ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, it's romantic, it's beautiful, it's very taboo. Like, a yeah, lot of people, if you're like, oh yeah, blood, like, that's literally a Tuesday for me. But people are like, oh my God, like, what do you do with it?
Well, it has to do with fear of disease.
Right.
And infection, which actually totally, is a lot of the metaphor of vampirism is about the fear of infection. But even today, the taboo persists with the idea of, like, oh, if you, like, let the blood, like, get out of control, then
right,
you are taking an unthinkable autoclave risk. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Which, like, everyone's be as risk aware as you want, but
yeah,
you probably touch old blood on the fucking subway every day, you know?
Well, you know, I recently actually asked my doctor,
mm-hmm,
if menstruation presented a higher risk of any STI transmission than any other fluid.
Yeah.
And she said no.
Yeah.
We did, like, a test, like, an extra test for Hep B and mm-hmm, Hep C because they're bloodborne pathogens.
But right,
you get this sort of sense of, like, you're squicked out.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably, like, a good thing to be squicked out by blood because right, if you, like, if there's blood outside of your body
right,
and you're not menstruating, you might want to notice, right? And that's the, so sometimes that, like, squicked out feeling is you just noticing, like, hey, are you where you're supposed to be?
Right. Yeah.
But, like, obviously if you're intentionally playing with that, that's part of what makes you so high about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about you, it makes me really high.
Oh yeah. The first time that I made someone bleed, I was like, is this an orgasm? And I do a lot of blood cupping, and the second the cup goes on and starts to pull, like, the droplets are getting bigger and bigger, and it's filling up the cup.
Yeah. And your Instagram is madness.
It's so hot.
What, do you have issues with being shadow banned?
I think I've been shadow banned for, like, ever. Yeah. I don't even notice. Yeah. Honestly,
you have a very, I've given up. Instagram. Yeah,
I've given up that fight. But also, I used to post a lot more stuff on Instagram, but everything just gets deleted.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Either people report it because they decide they don't want to see blood, so they think nobody else wants to see blood. I post a lot more on Twitter because they are
right
liberal with their policies about lenient, that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were talking about True Blood and the idea of it as just being, like, devotional and seductive.
Right. Taking someone's blood, I always consider they're offering it to me. They're giving it to me. And so it's like, yes, I will take your blood.
And then what?
I'll do what I want with it.
What do you do with it?
I have, usually the most fun thing that I like to do is, like, just put it all over the place, setting up the room like a Dexter style, like, sure, everything's plastic. When I do impact with, like, spiky implements, yeah, that's really fun because then it just
splatters.
Yes, it splashes everywhere. I have some permanent, like, stains on the white walls in my in my playroom. Using the cupping blood to just, I have these chalices that are, like, from Catholic mass.
Great.
So I'll put the blood in there and it just looks so beautiful. Covering each other with blood, tasting it. I've never, like, just full on drank it, but definitely, like, licked licked it and tasted it.
Yeah, I used to, when I would get cut, you know, as a kid, like, running around, I would always, like, immediately put it in my mouth.
Yeah. You and suck your cut.
Yeah.
Totally.
I don't know where I got that idea, but I also remember being, like, really pleased with myself. Thanks for talking. Thanks for taking a little blood detour. Although you really did with the chalice, you really brought it back to Catholicism.
Yes. I started a few years ago a Catholic fetish Instagram.
Oh, great.
So it's called Divine Submission.
Okay.
And basically what I do is
Is it still up?
It's up. Okay, I'm gonna look at it. It's mostly photos of when I visit churches, like really pretty statues or stained glass or whatever scenes from churches. And then the captions are always really kinky Bible verses.
Nice.
Yeah. So I actually chose one for you.
Thank you. Oh my God, I'm not following this. I need to change that.
I feel like you would like this a lot. This is Ezekiel 23:21.
I'm listening.
Yet she multiplied her whoredoms in calling to remembrance the days of her youth, wherein she had played the harlot in the land of Egypt. For she doted upon and lusted after her paramours there, whose members were like those of donkeys and whose emission was like that of stallions.
Wow. You're right. Wow.
It's wild, isn't it?
What a bunch of fucking perverts.
Emissions were like that of stallions.
Say it again.
I think the transubstantiation.
Oh, yeah.
That can also lend itself to, like, cannibalism, too.
Do tell.
Yeah. So transubstantiation is, like, the term for when Jesus turned.
Well, like, that's what happens to the Eucharist. You get the cheap right. little wafer.
Yeah.
And then the minute that it goes into the mouth of the person who's been confirmed, it transubstantiates into the flesh of Jesus.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's cannibalism.
Yes.
Except in my case, because I was never confirmed. So when I ate that wafer, it was just a wafer. Sometimes a wafer is just a wafer.
Right. Sometimes it's just a wafer. Like the body and the blood of Christ. Like you can play with that also in a cannibal way. You're drinking Christ's blood.
Yeah.
You're eating his flesh.
Yeah. What, can you give us an example of a scene where you would really sort of, like, torment someone with that, or?
I haven't done a cannibal scene ever.
It's just something that you're thinking about or, like, incorporating into the scene while, or is it just, it's just something that keeps you up at night?
Yeah, it's something that keeps me up at night.
Thinking about eating the flesh of Christ.
Yeah, it's just, like, they're all endless ideas for things that you can play with in your dirtiest ways.
Yeah.
The devotion and the corruption and the humiliation and the punishment, and you can add cannibalism onto that list. Well, in whatever way your freaky heart desires.
Well, I cannot think of a better note to end on. All right, so it's been a couple of
thousand years.
Uh-huh. Years. Yeah, we just covered it in 90 minutes.
Yeah, that's all you need to know.
How to pervert it and the way that it was perverted already.
Yes.
Well, Christine, is there anything coming up that you want to plug? Like a butt plug shaped like the baby Jesus.
Yeah. That would be great.
I have inserted a butt plug shaped like the baby Jesus into someone's butt.
Oh my God.
It wasn't even a Catholic scene. She was just like, I just really want to put the baby Jesus in my butt.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of sex toys now that are popular that are also Catholic aesthetic themed. Those are great. But plugs, I'm always hopefully going to be doing more fist scenes.
Yeah.
So number 5, when I'm ready, when I've had enough time in between, I usually put a call for submissions out, and then you can submit to me digitally. And I haven't picked a theme yet, but
do you have any ideas?
I've been thinking about a breakup heartbreak kind of theme.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. nothing personal or anything.
No. No dyke drama?
None. Never. But other than that, I always post what I'm doing on Instagram and Twitter, so.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Also, maybe we're doing a thing at PS1 together.
Oh, yeah.
For Kink Out.
I hope that happens.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
Yeah. Leather storytelling?
Yeah, I think so.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, very appropriate to everything we've talked about today.
Yes.
Yeah, we're starting now.
Yes.
We're getting ahead. Well, follow Kink Out for leather community events and education and art making and all that stuff that we are involved in, along with a lot of amazing other folks. And anything else?
I think that's it. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my God. Thank you for being here. I don't know enough about Catholicism to like make a joke about, I already made the peace be with
peace,
you joke.
I was just going to say, peace be with you.
And also with you.
Yes.
I'm learning. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here and for teaching me a lot about religion, which I usually just run screaming in the other direction from. So thank you for helping me to run screaming into its arms today.
Of course.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.